Today, we go on location to celebrate the 20th anniversary of Todd Rushing's renowned restaurant and Nick's 10 years in Atlanta. Join us as we delve into Todd's journey from his youth in Atlanta to co-founding Concentric's Restaurant Group, the emotional side of dining, and the challenges facing the restaurant industry today. Discover how Todd creates memorable experiences, invests in his people, and continuously adapts and innovates. All that and more in today's episode of The Marketing Mad Men.
They say marketing is a madman's game. So now we turn it over to The Marketing Mad Men with Nick Constantino and Trip Joel.
Happy Saturday and welcome to The Marketing Mad Men. Nick Constantino here and I am with Todd Rushing of Concentric's Restaurant Group. And we are doing our first ever on-location recording of The Marketing Mad Men. Todd, how you doing, bud?
I'm well. Nick, how are you?
It is wonderful to have you. This is a serendipitous occasion. We didn't find out how much serendipity was here until we started talking, but the restaurant is going on 20 years. And I have now officially, as of today, been in Atlanta for half that time. So we are celebrating two anniversaries with this. And we are very excited. So, Todd, the place is amazing. It brings back memories. As we walk through, some of the things that you were talking about were the vivid things that I remembered. It wasn't necessarily colors, but it was the homely feeling about it. So before we get to here, talk about your restaurant career and what brought you to this place, because that will frame a lot of the stuff of what this place is to you.
Well, in terms of career, grew up in Atlanta. My father, and this is the best part of my restaurant career, I graduated with 2 degrees from college.
Okay.
And he said, as I was applying to law school, maybe you need to take some time off and get a job.
Okay.
And so my father, being the wise man, and in reality, he was very wise. Because I took the time off. I'd always been in working in restaurants as a kid just to make extra money.
Sure.
And I grew up in Sandy Springs, and so I partied the entire summer before I actually got a job because
got it. My father put a date on. As is tradition.
You know?
Yep.
And my next door neighbor was a gentleman named Bob Amick who owned the Peasant Restaurant Group with Steve Meyer and Dick Daly. And,
okay.
And I walked next door, knocked on his door and said, I want to be in the restaurant business. And he said, no, you don't. And he spent better part of half a day trying to tell me I didn't want to do that. He hired me. Worked for him for 10 years. And at the end of that time, I was fully ingrained. And Peasant sold to another company, and that's different history.
Sure.
And I went off to be a chef in New Orleans for a couple of years.
Okay.
And Bob called me back in 1998 and said, we're going to do a restaurant up in Alpharetta called the Killer Creek Chop House. And we did that. And we divorced that partner that we'd done it with. And in 2001, we started Concentric Restaurants. So here we are, fast forward 37 years, and of those 37 years, 35 I've worked with Bob.
Love it.
And we've been partners and really pushing each other over the course of those 35 years. And the first restaurant was One Midtown Kitchen.
Yep.
And it was a very successful restaurant, which led us to where we're sitting now. We couldn't do two without one because one was so successful. It was the first restaurant post 9/11, which for any time was very, you know, food is all about being comforted.
Yeah.
Brings
people together.
9/11 really disrupted it, how everybody felt
yeah.
about things,
yeah.
particularly Americans.
Yeah. I think it did, but it also aftermath brought people together.
It did.
I was a New Yorker. My father actually was the CEO of the hospital that was the only helipad near 9/11. I didn't talk to my dad for like 2 weeks. I was in D.C. where Maryland when it happened. So I was 10 miles from the Pentagon when it happened. So initial shock, but the rallying around everything. Again, we talk about that serendipity. And then that you opened a restaurant at the time where everyone was coming together.
Right.
It was not being divided. They were coming together, which is wonderful.
But it shows you the emotional side of, what
for
dining
sure.
is,
for
but
sure.
what humanity is.
For sure.
And so here we are, success of One Midtown, and the landlord of this space said, you know, I got a space for you. Come have a look at it.
Yeah.
Bob and I come look at it, and literally, he'd seen it first, and brought me over to it, and I go, are you out of your mind? I mean, are you completely out of your mind? Nobody, this place was surrounded by nothing.
Yeah.
It was a decrepit part of Atlanta. It was a warehouse space, nothing around it, and you know, and I guess in a sense, he talked me into it. This made sense for us. And we launched Two Urban Licks. And it was an opportunity to do something, you know, a warehouse space, really make it sort of something special, wood roasted meats and fish, everything that's fun, about dining. Going back to, it made you feel comfortable.
Yeah, love it.
And if you can make people feel comfortable, then they're going to come and see you. And I think from day one, which was a struggle, I'll tell you, but that's more operational side. But we had some bumps.
Yeah, I believe it. And you need the bumps to get over it. I think we're going to walk through the restaurant and we're going to kind of film pieces of the actual restaurant because I think it's so important. My question is, a lot of people get into restaurants and they go front of house only or they want to own a restaurant. You were the chef too. So you got to see it. And not only that, you got to sell your licks in New Orleans, one of the most famous culinary institutions. How much do you think being a little bit of everything helped your ability to run restaurants now?
It helps a lot. I mean, you know, you can empathize both externally and internally. I can hire chefs and understand what they're going through. I can also understand it from a guest point of view. On the operational side, I can lend an opportunity to teach staff how to best approach a guest. But also
based on decades of experience, talking down to people. I'm like, you said 37 years, not me. Based on years of experience.
I'm an old guy in this business now. As old as my partner. Add 15 years, and that's how long he's been at it. So we bring that understanding of how to make people feel comfortable.
Love it. Love it.
And that's what added to. I think anybody that comes to Urban Licks, they feel comfortable.
Yeah.
They know what they're coming to. They know the style of food. You know, they know the style of service.
Yeah.
But they know they can be at home.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest thing. I mean, we were talking about, you know, how do you feel? You know, when you first came here, how did we make you feel?
Love it. And that's what I was going to say. New first timers have that comfort also. It's kind of easy to get someone who's coming a fourth time to make them feel comfortable. They're coming back a fourth time. But for somebody on their first time to have that comfort, that's a lot harder to do. And it's something you guys pulled off.
All right. But you came here your first time and you left and you still have a memory.
For sure. So that's an incredible thing.
That's the goal.
That is an incredibly powerful thing.
How to create a memory for somebody.
So I want to talk a little bit about the 20th anniversary. But first, what are your current thoughts of the state of the restaurant industry? Right, we're coming off COVID. There's a lot of news. You see a lot of news about restaurants closing down. What do you think the state of the restaurant industry is? And then that will segue into why you think you guys have made it for so long.
The current state is precarious. The economic environment, and you know, we all go through it. I mean, inflation is a challenge. Cost of goods have become much higher. Our checkpoint average when we went into the pandemic was at $46 a person.
Okay.
Where we are now is $61 a person.
Okay.
I've had to raise prices.
It's almost 33%. Just doing the math, I had 33%.
But I've had to raise prices
to reflect cost.
To reflect that, but it's not because I want to. It's to survive, and I think everybody is battling that same battle, and unfortunately, the U.S. public is battling that same battle.
Yeah.
You go to the grocery store, you go to the gas station, wherever you might be, you're battling those things. So for us, we are constantly, trying to figure out how we can add value, but more importantly, create those memories. If I can get you for, one time a month, if I can get you for that special occasion, if I can make that date.
Yep.
If you want to impress your girlfriend, boyfriend, whoever it might be, if I can get you that one time and then you feel comfortable with me, then you're going to always come back because I created that memory.
Yeah.
That's the challenge. Now, where we go from here, I think we're still probably in for another couple of years of things being rather tight.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree with that. I think you also create an experience that makes people feel like they're not just spending money on food. Because that's one of the things, right? You can go to the best restaurant, but if you feel like you're just there eating, your value proposition changes.
No.
If you feel like you're part of this experience and you're coming in, it feels like home, the drinks are there, there's love that goes into the wine and how it's curated with stainless steel. I think that part of it makes you a little bit, people are spending lots of money on traveling. They're going all over Europe. Everyone's crying poor, but they have no problem putting $3,000 on a credit card to fly over to Europe. So I think that experiential, and it might be a millennial thing, but the experiential part of it is what you've done a good job of, and you can't fake that.
It's creating a memory. I mean, I preach it every day. Our job is not about food and beverage, it's creating a memory.
Yeah.
And if you've created a memory and a positive vibe with it, with your guests, they're always going to come back and see you. But you have to invest yourself. It's all about the people investment. Food and beverage is great, but unless you invest in your people and they in turn invest in the guests to come and see you, you've lost.
Yeah. So we're celebrating 20 years. Before we get to some of the festivities planned for it, talk about one memory you had that was a oh crap moment.
Oh shit.
That was a oh shit moment. That, like, what do I do now? One, and I'll give you a second on that one. And then one moment that was like, holy crap, this was all worth it. Because I think those are the two extremes, but I think the middle is what every day is, but those are the memories you probably stick out. So talk about those.
So one memory, and it actually happened prior to the pandemic, that it is a memory of not only teaching people, but also that, you know, creating memories. I came back to operate this restaurant, unfortunately, because of the change of personnel here.
Okay.
And we're coming up to Valentine's Day of 2020. And, you know, what we do here is, you know, want to take care of people, create memories for those folks coming in and see us. And I said to him about a month beforehand, we're going to do 1,600 people on Valentine's Day.
Okay.
And they went, we can't do that. I go, sure you can. Think about it. These are two people coming in. They execute two dishes. You put it out. It's about an hour turn time. We have 310 seats. We can get this
math.
Done.
We're doing it math-wise. Right, yeah.
And they're like, we can't do this. We've never done this. And I go, we can do this. So we did slightly less than 1,600 people on Valentine's Day. We made a lot of people happy. I calmed the nerves of all the chefs who said, sure, we can't do this. You know, the service staff made lots of money.
And now the bar is set so high.
The bar is set.
Yeah, right? Love it. You won twice.
But, you know,
but you took the risk.
But that was 15 years ago. Well, you know, 16 years ago. But it's everything is part of how you set the tone.
Yeah.
You know, satisfy the guest first, take care of them. Then you satisfy your employees.
Yeah.
Let them make money and make
things. It has to go both ways. If the customers are enjoying it, they pay the employees more money. Right. If the employees are doing a job, the customers pay more money. So if you don't know that balance, you're.
And then set everything up for success.
Love it.
That's all organization.
Love it.
I don't care what you do.
Yeah.
If you make widgets.
And we're simplifying
you make airplanes,
it. But at its core, everyone thinks of all the other stuff, right? The painting doesn't matter if that's the bad experience. Right. So I love it. When we get back from the break, we're going to go back with your favorite experience. I don't know if that was a good one or a bad one or an ocean moment. We'll go back with your favorite experience. And then we're going to talk a little bit about Bully Boy, and we're going to talk about the 20th anniversary and what the future looks like. So you've been listening to The Marketing Madmen on Extra 106.3, and we'll be right back.
Now back to The Marketing Madmen on Extra 106.3 FM.
And we're back. We're going to continue our conversation with Todd Rushing of Concentrics Restaurant Group.
I mean, that's the original sign, which is, you know, Bully Boy, just to give you a history. Bully Boy was a blacksmith workshop.
Okay.
And he was here, obviously, before we were. And then we decided to do Two Urban Licks. And, you know, we wanted to use, as we have any time we do restaurants, is utilize folks that are local to us.
Yeah.
So we asked him to do the sign. And so that's the original sign
of
Two Urban Licks.
Love it.
And he got real excited, did it for us, and the beauty of it is he still has done a lot of other work for us over the course of the years. The negative side is the Beltline came along, which we can touch on,
but
the Beltline comes along and he can't afford to be here anymore. So now I have another restaurant.
Gentrification at its finest.
Because
give it to the blacksmith.
He's gone,
gentrification at its finest.
But the whole idea is this is a warehouse. It's 150,000 square feet.
Yeah.
And everybody goes, well, why in the hell would you guys want to come over here? Because there's nothing over here. There was nothing here.
Nothing.
There were none of the apartments, the condos, the homes. The post office was the only thing here. And the telephone factory.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That was it. And, you know, and for us, it was like, if we hadn't had this success of One Midtown Kitchen, which is in God's honest truth, and then, you know, our landlord who said, you know, I have this really cool space, come over and look at it. And we looked at it and go, this is great, but how does anybody even want to know?
Yeah.
But then the same thing applied to One Midtown Kitchen.
Sure.
Nobody knew we were going to be, and yet we were successful.
Yeah.
So we came here. Turner had 130,000 square feet worth of this space, and they did all of their their set design and everything for theirs, and they did storage and everything else. And then there was us.
Yeah.
So we created what was really cool. You pull up, sense of arrival. Sense of arrival is you drive up into the building, you get dropped off, you don't stand in the rain.
Sure.
The cold, the heat. I mean, we put in heaters so that people could stand out here and not be cold in the wintertime, which doesn't exist in Atlanta, no. But we'll talk about it.
You got a week.
And then, but it was like, when you get out of the car, where do you go? Well, you know, there's a sign.
Yeah.
And then there's just a door.
Industrial door at that.
Right. But that was the whole idea.
Yeah.
You know, and so we've adapted.
How many people
over the
look confused
years?
When they're here?
They do.
Especially early. People are like,
to this day,
I don't know where I'm going.
To this
people
day,
people haven't been here probably.
Do that. And they still go, where am I going?
Yeah.
You know, they pull up and they stop out here and they go, well, what am I supposed to do? And you're like, well, drive up the drive.
Yeah.
All the signs say valet up here.
Now we're assuming people read signs. That's problem number one.
Right. Well, that is.
That's problem number one.
But then you come in. And it's just, but even coming in, you open the door and you really don't know what you're coming into.
No. Nightclub, it could be a cabaret, it could be
anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, the curtains hide things.
Yeah.
And it's all about a sense of arrival. It's a sense of excitement, a sense of not knowing and making you feel that you're coming in, and then it sort of blossoms into something that's important. You know, to me, it's really important.
Yeah, and it is like a grand reveal. So I will ask, influences. So it doesn't have to be culinary. A lot went into this. What are the things, when you look through here, what were the things that biggest influence when you wanted to make this, and what was going into what this place would be look like?
Well, I give a lot of credit to my partner, Bob Amick, because it really had a sense of taking the building and recognizing how you can take this big space, soften it, and make it feel really comfortable for the guests. And so we soften the walls and you know, and so we have this wood paneling on the walls and we have the lighting.
Yeah.
Everything made you feel, you know, you don't know where you're coming to, so you need a hug to make sure that you feel okay.
But it doesn't seem too serene. It's not bland and it's not just white walls. It's a little bit of everything, mixed textures.
And everything has industrial sort of characteristics to it, whether it be steel and glass in the wine wall or the light fixtures that we use, everything else, you know, but it softens it.
Yeah.
It takes the anxiety away from the guest.
Which is why you want to eat. You want to escape. Yeah. You're not going to eat to be stressed and tense. You're going to escape.
Got to get away.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of it.
Yeah,
and so then so as a sense of arrival, you arrive, you open the door and you're like, okay, I'm here, but what am I looking at?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, and for us, you start in the bar because that's the first thing you're going to do when we show up at a restaurant, you're going to order a drink, right? Whether it be the wine tower, which is something really special, or the cocktails, which you can have at the bar. And then, you know, we'll take you into the dining room, but that's the cool part of what we're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, and I would say people sort of take this for granted now because everyone's trying to make things look like this now. This is 20 years ago, this is 22, it was ahead of its time for Atlanta and for the country. Yeah. Everyone takes this for granted. Everyone says they want to soften the walls and make it welcoming, but not everyone's taking old spaces and completely retrofitting them.
Yeah, we took a lot of things. We're a lot ahead of our time.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, so, you know, but coming into the restaurant, you know, the bar is the focus, and then you come in. And the interesting part, when you have 10,000 square feet, how do you make a restaurant feel comfortable if it's not busy? And my concern always was, if we're not going to be successful as we are today, how do you make people feel engaged as opposed to sitting in a big empty dining room? And I said, let's put the restaurant in the center of meals. Let's put the kitchen in the center of the restaurant. So that's what we did.
That also makes 5 p.m. appealing. So you're coming in at all hours and it feels like there's stuff going on, which makes it probably fills it up in those hours more also.
And it brings energy.
In life, yeah.
And everybody wants to be a part of it.
Love it.
And we put seating it here at the bar. You can watch it all happen. The chefs can talk to you when they're preparing your food. But, it's all wood roasted meats and fish.
Yeah.
So now everything comes to life. You know, you have fire, fire, fire. And fire is what drives everybody to it.
Okay. And I think the other thing, and again, I think it's another thing that's taken for granted nowadays, but everything's got to be an experience, right? Now everything has to be experiential. You go out and it's, oh, I'm fine spending all this money because it was an experience. That's not what it was like 20 years ago. Yeah. People were more conservative with Dunny. They weren't expecting this. So now when you take back and rewind 20 years, all these words are things everyone's saying every day now. But when you take a step back to 20 years ago, and now
we're talking about it.
Ironically, what I believe personally for this is what it's going to go back to. The part of the it feels like you're being cooking in your house, right? Nowadays, everything is so sterile and everything's got to be from this farm. And it's, I get it, but there's something about someone roasting wood in the house and my grandma roasting a lamb when she's turning it over wood that makes it
beautiful.
That's beautiful.
But it's warmth. It makes you feel part of something.
You're part of something completely.
And that's what's really cool.
Completely.
And it brings the memory back to what makes you feel that
at home. And do you I think it's crazy, but I think that there's a chance you might have caught a whole cycle where it wasn't trendy, and then all of a sudden now food's going to go back to over wood fire. You feel like you're at home. So you might have been around so long that you've made the circle. Is that, does that feel good? I mean, that's crazy to think about.
Oh, it makes me feel good. It just makes me feel how old I am.
But it makes me feel good about this place. Because again, it was, my first time here was 12 years ago, and I remember what you're saying. I remember. I couldn't pick it out of a lineup, what colors you're using, but I remember the feel when I came here.
Right.
And that is it. That rotisserie right there with the fire going, that going, is something that you try to duplicate in your house. You enjoy barbecuing, all these things. You don't want to see, who cares how it's made behind? This is what you want to see. This is how you enjoy eating, and how I enjoy eating.
Everything to me about food is all about memories, about the simplicity in which you execute it. And I don't care if you're doing it at home or you're at somebody's restaurant. And if you can execute those things and make people feel comfortable, then you've satisfied that need, whether it be a first date or you've been married for 30 years or it's, you know, it's a special occasion, whatever it might be, you've put everybody at ease. That's the beauty of dining.
Love it.
I mean, that's what it's supposed to be.
Love it. And again, that's the one thing that will stay consistent. Right, you look back, like in this country over 200 years, you know it's gonna be consistent, people are gonna wear jeans. There's only certain things that you know are not trends that will last, and that's something that is gonna last. And that's what makes, I think that's what gives character and makes this place so endearing. So my eyes are drawn to the painting, so I don't know where you were going, but I just kind of wanna talk about the painting because it's where my eye went to absolutely next.
Well, the painting comes with the fact that you have a 10,000 square foot building.
Okay, you got to fill some wall space. Wallpaper wasn't an option.
So you have an option of going, I need something that's going to go in a museum, or I need something that really makes a statement. Todd Murphy was not only a friend of my partner, who is a collector of art, but my mother, who's an interior designer here in Atlanta. And he had a warehouse over on Edgewood, and Todd was just this wonderful artist.
Yeah.
He had this particular piece.
Wow.
He had all six panels, and then he added the seventh panel after we committed to buying it. But it made a statement for us.
For sure.
It makes a statement for him. But more importantly, it set a tone for what we were trying to achieve here. And it's just been an iconic part of, if anybody sees this, they know where they are.
Yeah.
You know, I don't care any print. You know, somebody talks about it, so they go, oh, it's the artwork. People still come in and just take pictures of the artwork, and they don't even dine with us. That's just because that piece, you know, is iconic.
And I'm not going to pretend to be some avid art guy, but art is supposed to be whatever the person wants it to be that looks at it. And there's so much going on there to interpret and look. It's similar to the restaurant, right? It is what it is to you, and that's what makes you come back. So you two people can look at it and see it and think 1,000 different things, right? 50 people can look at it, 1,000,000 people, they're going to all see something different. It's what makes art good, and I think it's part of that experience that keeps people coming back.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, and
love it.
For us, you know, it is the birth of Margaret Mead, who was an anthropologist.
Yeah.
And it sort of says, hey, this is something special that, you know, you're looking at it, you can see it anywhere in the restaurant, and people just get excited about it.
Love it.
That's what's really cool.
Love it. All right, so we've come to, let's call it the heart of the restaurant, where everything comes from and everything gets pumped out from here.
Everything comes from here.
In and out of here. So obviously, this is a huge kitchen that everybody gets to view. My question to you is, where did the culinary influences come from that made you think of this is the kitchen we need and this is what we want it to look like?
Well, as I told you, I mean, we needed to break up the space.
Sure.
But then from that, you need the drama. And for us, we just love food that's wood roasted.
Okay.
And so it was like, how do you get that? Well, for us, wood burning oven, wood burning grill or rotisserie, and actually what we won't see is a wood burning smoker. All of that imparts flavor.
Yep.
And for us, you know, it's comfort though.
Yep.
Everything we talk about Two Urban Lakes is cool as it may look. It's all about comfort. I mean, it's the comfort of the menu and the things that you feel when you come in. You know, it's like eating with grandma and having those special. So, you know, it's wood burning rotisserie chicken, or it's, you know, it's a piece of fish out of the oven.
Love
I mean,
it.
Those things are great. And wood just imparts that flavor.
Love it.
You're going back to the basics of how you cook.
Yeah, and ironically, it is much harder to cook that way.
Oh, it's very,
because you're not controlling temperature.
Difficult.
You have to be a professional. I tell people, like, yeah, cool, I get you have a Traeger with an automatic thing that does the time on Bluetooth, but like, it takes a while to get a big green egg, right?
Yeah,
cooking over wood fire, doesn't matter if you're using aluminum foil, if you get it wrong, it could be really, really wrong.
It can be very wrong.
Exactly right, right? If you put something in an oven that's preheated 400 degrees, it's hard to screw it up. But in something like this, in one angle wrong, the char could be wrong and it could burn the top of it. There's so much that goes in. So when I say simple, I mean it's simple because it's an old school way of doing it, but it is one of the hardest ways to actually cook food.
Yeah. You know, it all comes down to touch and how things feel. But it's the love you put into food. And I think that's what I try to impart on the folks that work for me, but also our guests is, you know, we're putting a lot of love into what we do.
Yeah.
And that's what's really
and
most important.
The open kitchen and all these concepts looking at you shows there's love.
Yeah.
Because it's hard to love somebody from hiding behind a corner somewhere.
But it really is.
Like,
we can't hide from anything we do because here we are.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. If we screw it up,
everyone's gonna see it. It keeps you honest too, right? It probably hones these guys' skills because it keeps them honest.
To me, it you know, I question any restaurant now that I go into when I can't see what they're doing. Now, granted, I have this
a little bit more experience. Sure, sure.
But, you know, you should be able to see, be a part of it. But it adds also to the experience. All the sensory things that happen when you walk into a restaurant. To hear the crack of the fire, to see the flame.
Love it.
You know, you have the music going on. You have the lights going on. Everything adds a part of what the experience
makes
is supposed to be.
Love it. This is the new part. So talk about where we are and the importance of all this around us.
Well, 20 years ago, there was, you know, this warehouse and there was railroad tracks that ran up to this. And it was part of a system of railway that ran 28 miles around the city of Atlanta. It was defunct.
Yeah.
It was dead. You know, to put it in perspective, the homeless, you know, walked.
Yeah. Undesirables, we'll call them.
So we brought this on, built this patio here, and then we had a bocce ball court. And then we had sort of, let's just call it barrier to keep the
undesirables
out of here.
So, got it.
So that's how it was. Now, over the course of time, the Beltline became, and it's a wonderful part of what Atlanta has become. And it's added to not only our business, but to the livelihood of what Atlanta now is. And with that, we've added a secondary patio, but we've added more guests. We've added another way to get here. We've added, you know, just an opportunity for us to be continue growing into the fabric of what Atlanta is. And, you know, and for us, it's been fabulous. I mean, it's been a wonderful be a part of it all by happenstance.
Yeah.
Because we weren't.
Yeah. Sometimes there's more. I think there's more that goes into it sometimes. I think if you put good vibes into the world, you get good vibes back.
Well,
we'll save my hippy dippy stuff for another conversation.
But I don't disagree with you.
Yeah.
The karma is a bitch, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's either a bitch or a wonderful thing.
Right.
And it's never in the middle.
In this case, it's been a wonderful thing.
Good for you.
So I'm going to take it.
Good for you. Good for you. All right. Let's go inside. Let's talk.
Now back to the Marketing Mad Men on Extra 106.3 FM.
Welcome back to the Marketing Mad Men on Extra 106.3. Nick Constantino here with Todd Rushing of Concentrix Restaurant Group. And I'm going to pick your good thing for you.
Okay.
So I have to imagine, I'm going to liken this. We're about to start the NFL season to football. In football, a good coach is famous because of not just him, but all the people underneath him, that tree that comes out. I have to imagine that in this town and all over the country, that this establishment has started so many other establishments and so many other chefs to other places. And I have to imagine that's a pretty proud moment for you.
You know, I've had a lot of folks work for me You know, and out of this restaurant, but also is collectively, I mean, we've had, you can see Richard Blaise on TV once a week with Gordon Ramsay, because he's TV, and he worked for me three different times.
Wow.
But on this particular, you know, restaurant, Two Urban Lakes, I mean, the opening chef was Scott Serpez, fabulous chef. And Scott's been around the city of Atlanta, well, we're showing our age, probably 40 years, right? But, you know, his opening sous chef was Kevin Gillespie.
Crazy.
I mean, Kevin already has three, maybe four restaurants. You know, Kevin, you know, came to us just working at the Ritz-Carlton.
Crazy.
You know, and then I have, you know, Michael Bertozzi. Michael was a kid right out of Auburn University working for David Bancroft, who is now... So Michael Bertozzi was working for David Bancroft, who is a James Beard Award-winning chef for the Southeast. You know, Michael comes to us, he calls us up. He goes, you know, I'd like to work for you. And he comes in as a line cook, becomes a sous chef, becomes the executive chef, becomes our culinary director. Now he's the culinary director for Kimball Musk, Elon Musk's brother.
I can only imagine what that adventure is like.
And he's running all kinds of restaurants for him out in the West Coast.
Is it rewarding to have that big of a web? Is it something you think about often? It's got to feel.
My partner and I joke all the time. You know, we are at the point now in our careers that you either work for us or, you know, you work for, we in the olden days, we would say the peasant group or Pano, Kerastasis, or now it's sort of us and Ford Fry.
Got it.
And, you know, it's that's the reality. You know, you've been a cook, you've been a bartender, you've been a server, whatever it might be, manager, you know, you've worked. And I get great satisfaction.
Amazing.
Seeing these folks be
Amazing.
Successful.
I love it.
Richard Tang, who worked for me as a bartender, he has, you know, he has Bar Diver.
Yeah.
And I think he has two other concepts.
And all in town, too.
And they're all in town.
It's amazing. I love it.
He was a bartender.
I love it. I think that's the moment. That's a proud thing. Congrats on that. We would be remiss if we didn't cover Bully Boy. I have eaten there. If I had to pick an opposite restaurant to make than this place, even though it's right across the street, that's what I would pick. So talk about the style of food there, how it's different. Give some love to that, because honestly, I had a great meal there and it made me feel like I was transported to another country completely, another part of the world, which is a cool thing.
Well, I appreciate that. So Bully Boy is Japanese.
Yep.
And what I call Japanese, it is cooked Japanese food with influence of Southeast Asia. So it's not pure Japanese. And then it has sushi. But what it does is it's completely different from here. So you have raw food, you have cooked food, but you have this more small, intimate environment. This is 300 seats. That's 90 seats. You know, this is, you know, something that is big and boisterous and in your face. And, you know, this is, Bully Boy is something that's more comforting to a certain degree.
Yeah.
But it's just beautiful food.
Yeah.
Well executed.
Yeah.
You know.
Was it a passion project? Why did you go so opposite? Were you intending on doing that? Did you want to go so different? What was the inspiration behind that?
Our inspiration has always been to do something different here in Atlanta. And so if you look at the portfolio of the restaurants that we've done, we have done restaurants that were so ahead of their times that people go, I don't get it. And that's okay. And we've done other restaurants where people go, you know, I really understand this and I'm a big supporter of it. And Bully Boy was really more, the name was a passionate part of my partners, because Bully Boy was a steakhouse somewhere in between Manhattan and upstate New York, where his father was the athletic director at West Point.
Okay.
And they would meet aunt and uncle and have dinner at a place called Bully Boy.
Okay, there's a lot between those two places. Okay,
a lot. But here we go. A
couple million people.
So here we are. And so we're talking about the concept, and I go, I really want to do this style of food.
Yeah.
And he goes, great, that's how we want to eat. You know, make it really sort of fun as the food's prepared.
Yeah.
You know, brings to the table, everybody gets to enjoy it.
Love it.
And I go, what are you going to call it? He goes, Bully Boy. And I go, and what reference does that have to anything we're doing? And he goes,
100-mile radius somewhere in New York?
It doesn't matter.
There you go. Right? That's it.
And
then
the reality of food and naming the restaurants, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
things
have a name.
I love it. So we might end the radio show, but we're going to just do this in succession. So I have three questions for you.
Okay.
First and foremost, how do people find you? How would you find people about the information about the 20th anniversary? Where do you want to go to find you?
So you find us on Instagram. Okay. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on our websites. Okay. You know, it's toururbanlakes.com.
Beautiful.
It's bullyboy.com. That's easy. You know, you can come see us.
Yep.
Because that's more important. Yep. I'd much rather.
Yep. And we'll do a walkthrough. So when you get to the door, you know how the hell to get in here. That's rather, an important part of all this. So you'll see that. So we'll get to that.
Because I want you to come see me and I can tell you, and you can find me here.
That's awesome.
Because I'm here pretty regularly.
That's awesome. So that was the easy question. Now I'm going to get a little harder and then I'm going to go really hard. So the harder question is, what is your favorite thing on the menu? Of here and at Bully Boy.
Ah, okay.
Told you it'd be hard.
It is hard. Favorite thing on the menu here, you know, and I, wow. I'm going to say currently the beef cheeks is the favorite thing here. And it is beef that is braised, then it's reformed and pressed and served on Green Hatch chili polenta.
Yummy.
And it's served with poached eggs and pico de gallo.
I know what I'm getting.
But, you know, that I love.
That's amazing.
Now, at Bully Boy, it's whole fish.
Love it.
By far.
It's cooked
flash
out.
Fried, flash fried, Thai style,
amazing.
Thai vegetables. It's got
chilies on
it. I love that. Side of rice, put it all together, pick it off with your chopsticks.
Love it.
You can go.
There's no wrong way to do that. Just attack it.
Get
dirty.
And a glass of sake.
Get dirty.
You're in heaven.
Get dirty. Okay, so now the hardest question.
Okay.
The hardest question is, what advice would you give to somebody who wants to open a restaurant or looks at this place and say, that's really cool, I want to do that. And let's skip the usual, don't freaking do it, stupid. Let's skip that one. What advice would you give to people about, just about hospitality in general?
That it's about people. I think that's the biggest thing. You know, everybody looks at opening a restaurant that is easy because cooking food and serving it to somebody is easy, but it is conveying your sense of hospitality and the culture that you have to create so that everybody works on the same page. And it's really hard to convey to them, this is how we want to make people feel, because people are the most important part. Anybody can cook a good meal. Anybody can put a beverage out, have a great cocktail. But until you include the people part of it and how you make people feel, you know, how when you're seated, how they greet you, how...
It's contagious. It vibes through the whole place.
Often times when you go into a restaurant, you have a great meal and you have a great experience and, you know, the execution is there. But I always talk about, you know, service is something done to you. Hospitality is something done for you. And if you do these things that are done for you and you make them feel that, then they leave and it's a great time. When it's done to you, you leave and you go, that was a great meal. Everything worked well. But I leave.
But you don't feel like it's much a part of it. Right. It feels like it's been, I love it.
It's empty.
It's empty. Well, this has been great. Happy 20th.
Thank you.
What I would tell people is, you lasted a 350-seat restaurant in Atlanta for 20 years, which is pretty much like a magic. Like, that's like lightning hitting you while you're riding a shark, which is just insane. So congrats, my friend.
Thank you.
Much appreciated.
Pleasure.
You're listening to Marketing Madman on Extra 106.3, and we will catch you next week.